Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Jesse Newburn, and we're going to be talking about her new book, Uber Chronicles, Field Notes from the Front Seat, and we'll be also talking about the gig economy. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to drive for Uber? Have you ever been curious as to what kind of people use Uber? Where are they going? What do they talk about during the ride? How do they behave or misbehave? If you want the answer to those questions, this is the book to read. Uber Chronicles, Field Notes from the Front Seat, is the first in a series that answers those questions in the form of storytelling. For more information, you can visit the website www.uber-chronicles.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. And Jesse's book is also available at amazon.com, and I have a direct link to her book there also in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Jesse to the show. Good day, Jesse.
Hi there.
Well, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I shouldn't say this, but I'm uber excited to have you here. I was practicing that all morning. Well, listen. I'd like to, first of all, start with, obviously, but you probably didn't grow up thinking that you were going to be an Uber driver or maybe even read a book about it. But if you wouldn't mind sharing with our listeners just a little bit about your background and kind of your journey so far.
Yeah, the story that goes on and on. But the short version is I have been in I'm 53 and I've been in marketing and communications for many years. I've had my own business for probably a good 20 or so years and have had to shift and change with every single technology that came along just for the type of business that I had. And first started way back when desktop publishing was new. And so I've always sort of been in this, and then about 18 months later, my unique selling position, my edge, disappeared when the technology changed and everyone could do what I could do. And I've just sort of always been in this world of like doing something and it's kind of unique and different. And then like, everyone else is doing that now. And then on to something else, and on to something else. And in my own field, I had several jobs and some senior level jobs and was just not really sure if I wanted to keep doing corporate America. There's some value in it, of course, mm-hmm. and lots to contribute mm-hmm. there. But also I think when you hit a certain position of senior leadership, that it's hard for companies to hire you downwind of that job. And
right.
Those jobs are fewer and fewer. So I sort of found myself like not sure if I wanted to go back doing the corporate stuff. I had given up my business to do the jobs and was kind of in this quandary of like, well, I don't know. I just don't know what I want to do. And I actually had talked a whole lot of people out of doing driving for Uber. I'd had a number of friends who would say, just sort of casually or less casually, wanting to talk more about it. They're like, I think I'm going to do Uber. And I'm like, why would you do that? And yeah, I know. It's a little ironic. And then, long story short, and part of it is just having being in midlife and, kind of these midlife questions of like, is this all there is? And is this all I'm going to do? And I was just sort of kind of like, I just needed to do something that was going to work because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I was in this quandary of not knowing what to do. And so I thought, well, if I go if I apply to be an Uber driver and if I download the app and if I turn it on, my phone's going to ring and I'm going to get a call and I'll just drive. Like it was a just do something sort of something.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it and I was like, wow, that was really kind of fun. And then I did it another night and another night. And I came home one night about 4 or 5 nights out. And I thought to myself, like, wow, these conversations and what's happening with the people in the car and all, I was like, this is really interesting. And I was kind of sleepy and I just wrote about each passenger. And I had a bit of an intuition just to write like a key experience, like what I got from each person. And posted that on Facebook and woke up the next morning and my Facebook page was just flooded with comments from friends who were like, wow, you know, this is riveting and, you know, like it's amazing, like to ride along with you and to see, you know, people's lives and all. And people just kept encouraging me to keep writing. And so I did.
Well,
so yeah, I think I don't drive for Uber all the time, and in some ways it's kind of hard to make time for it because you can get really far away from your house, and I might only have 2 hours to drive, but you know, the rides can take me far away and all. So, but I think it's really fascinating. I think it's really an amazing way to be upfront and personal with other people that you might not otherwise engage with. So I think there's a lot of value in it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've entertained the idea myself on occasion. I thought, you know, because it just sounded like that would be different. I mean, and it's one of those entrepreneurial kind of opportunities that's unique now, you know, right now, that it could be fun. So now, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about this. First of all, what you just got started, and did you have any reservation about maybe having questionable riders?
No, I've never been worried about that. That just doesn't. I'm kind of the belief that, like, you know, if you have like a destiny with God, or you know, if something really serious is going to happen or whatever, that you can't avoid that
okay.
kind of stuff. Like, it's, you know, whether it's going to happen in your car or it's going to happen elsewhere. So I was never worried about that.
Okay.
My main worry was I didn't want my friends to know that I was doing it because, I mean, I have had, you know, some pretty significant jobs and professional successes and all, and it seemed like a really big step down. And I was like, oh, gosh, you know, I hope no one gets in the car that I know.
Oh, yeah.
Which can sound a little goofy that now I'm like on, you know, writing a book or several books and telling everyone I'm writing, and people start talking about Uber and I'm like, I drive Uber. So now I've flipped my perspective on it. But yeah, in the beginning, my biggest trepidation was actually that people I knew would find out that I was driving for Uber.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of, and it's kind of funny because it's in a way, you know, you have that. I mean, it contains that worry, contains judgment. You know, that particular occupation or activity is less than, you know, what you were doing before.
Yeah, there's a very. I mean, you know, with anything, you know, the barrier to entry is a lot of the. Value and judgment around it. And the barrier to entry, you know, with driving, whether it's delivering pizzas or delivering people, you know, is a pretty low barrier to entry. I mean, obviously you have to have a vehicle and there's some legal considerations vis-a-vis Uber in terms of the age of your car and getting an inspection, you know, stuff like that. But the barrier to entry is pretty low. So, and I was used to a profession where the barrier to entry was much higher.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think I saw a TV show. I think it was last night. Even it might have been a recorded one, but there was someone who was applying to be an Uber driver, and he was gonna fill out the application, and they kind of like wrote his name. And it's like, okay, that's it. You know, you're in. And I had a laugh. I went, oh my God, I'll be talking to Jesse tomorrow about that.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I noticed when I was reading some of the stories on your website is that there are rider ratings. So can you talk a little bit about the ratings and how that works?
Yeah, I think so. The ratings are very akin to something we've become comfortable with, or it's a common thing with like eBay where the seller,
the buyer
rates the seller and the seller rates the buyer, so that, which I think is a very fair thing. You know, the buyer gets to say, yes, you know, this person delivered what they said they were going to deliver and their communication was good and blah, 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 whatever. And the seller gets to say, wow, this buyer said they were going to buy it and they paid on time and they were a great buyer. You know? Or you can do the opposite. You know, you can say, wow, you know, this buyer, you know, said the product was fine and there was a hole in it or whatever. I'm going to, you know, rate you. And so people protect their ratings. Unfortunately, in my experience, in my perception of how Uber's ratings work, that there's no, because Uber doesn't, when I buy something off of eBay, I have a relationship. Like I bought this, I just got something today from eBay. I bought a skirt.
Right.
I love merino wool skirts. I get a merino wool skirt. So, I mean, I have a relationship with that buyer. There's a specific transaction. Uber doesn't want the buyers and, I mean, Uber doesn't want the drivers and the riders to have a relationship. Other than the moment that they're in the car. Well, I mean, they don't, I don't, like, when I call, if I call a rider to say I'm here or where are you or I can't find you, I don't get their phone number. I'm using Uber's technology to be able to call them. Just like, likewise, so I can't call them later and be like, you know, I mean, you don't want creepy guys asking people out on dates and you don't want someone being mad because someone did something and calling them and harassing them or whatever. So it's all, it's protected in that way. And so what happens then is that these ratings come in, but they're not connected to anything. So anyway, I mean, I could go into it. It's a much longer version of it, but it's kind of useless because you get these ratings and you're like, well, but why? Like, did I get a rating because you were actually 6 minutes late coming down and I started your ride at 2 minutes and you were mad at me because you're really bad at the fact that you're just late all the time? But I pointed out that you're late by starting your ride. So you gave me a 1 star, like, or, you know, I mean, I'm just making that up, but
you just
never know. Or like, I will, like the one thing I dock passengers for is their scent and the smell. Like if somebody gets in my car and they just smell like, you know, like their every single body product that they use is, cherry flavored mist and, you know, lemon lime, whatever. And they just stink, you know, like, so that's one thing that, natural body odor I let people slide with because they may or may not know, but I feel like the thing I dock people for is chemical smells. But they don't know. They don't get the feedback. So.
Okay. So when you get the ratings, you don't get any explanation with it. It's just a simple rating?
Exactly. Yeah, it's just you just get stars. Your stars go up or down. Or they now have like words where, I mean, like I once had somebody dock me. My one negative comment was someone said I wasn't professional. I'm like, well, in what regard? Like, I mean, there's just useless feedback. It's unfortunate because it could be more, was I unprofessional because I talked too much? Was I unprofessional because I got lost? Was I unprofessional? But, you know, I mean, like, were my car windows not clean enough for their taste, which is highly likely. There is a rating system, but like I said, although I really am a fan of that kind of rating for, like with eBay and all, I just don't think it works well. I don't think it works as well with Uber. That's my opinion.
Yeah, because with eBay, you're able to give specific. So, I mean, that at least, you know, lets people know who look at the ratings, you know, lets them know why, you know, why you're rated as you are. So, I mean, it's really more information. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I never knew that they had that kind of thing, but it is a shame that they, you know, since they're so huge, you know, that they haven't been able to make that function more useful, you know, for both drivers and for riders. Now, one of the things I noticed in one of the stories you had, I believe it was a woman who was the one who worked for an assisted living. She was the first front seat person. So, you know, can you, I mean, you know, I didn't even, that never even crossed my mind, front seat, back seat. I always would have thought the person like a cab, they would jump in the back seat. So, but is it just kind of up to the rider to choose, or does the driver have, you know, a say with this?
The rider chooses. I mean, I definitely notice for myself that there are times when I'm not as in the mood for someone to sit up front. And so I may, like, where I pull up the car, where I pull my car up and, and you know, put my car in front of their
the
body.
The back door will be right in front of them.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Like, so I have definitely contributed to whether they sit more toward the front or the back. Definitely noticed that. but yeah, it's a you know, in terms of people driving and, you know, whether people, your listeners have or have not already been in Uber, you know, when someone sits in the front seat, they're saying by virtue of getting in close with you. I mean, assuming there's not two or three people in the back seat, choosing to sit in the front seat, that they want a conversation, that they want more engagement.
And that would be.
Yeah. So sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's not a good thing. Sometimes it's like, I don't want to talk to you as much. You're not that interesting. Or I'm kind of bored after talking to you for 2 minutes. So, you know, I usually go when I'm a passenger, I usually go for the front seat. But there are times when I also just want to be in the back seat and be a little more quiet.
Okay. Yeah. Again, that was just one of those, when I was reading the story, it was one of those thoughts that just had never crossed my mind, you know, as like an option, you know, or you know, that, that there was any kind of variance with that. So now, for people who are listening who may have considered being a driver for Uber, what would you say are some of the characteristics that would make for a good Uber driver?
Well, I think being a good operator of your car to start with, is obviously important. I actually just saw on the Uber app, the Uber driver app, the other day they had a feedback thing that was showing my braking and my acceleration, and it was rating me on the number of times I braked and accelerated. Yeah.
Really?
There's like, I guess, like the accelerometer in your car, in your phone or something, can give them that kind of feedback. So obviously being a good driver is important. And I mean, I'm sure there's a zillion different types of Uber drivers. I'm sure some are just functional and like get you from point A to point B, and that's fine. And others like me are a little more talkative. I try to be respectful when people, I try to be sensitive to whether people seem focused on their phone and not wanting to engage versus wanting to engage. So I think there's a bit of just being open to humanity and accepting what comes in your car, what and who comes in your car. And there's also a bit of flow. Like I remember one night I was like, oh, I'm ready to go home. This will be my last ride. You know, and I was like three or four houses from my house. And my Uber app was on and a ride came in and I was like, oh, okay, I'll take it. And the ride was like an hour away, like down toward DC. And then I ended up driving for like a couple more hours. So it's just like, you know, like, I was like, you know, okay, just got to go with the flow. So there is a bit of like, you can't control who gets in your car and you can't control where they're going and you don't know where they're going. And so there's a whole lot of just, like, receiving what comes your way and going with it.
Okay, so when you're, like, on the clock, so to speak, then you get a call come in and it could be anywhere. I mean, there's no geographic parameters as to, you know, how far you may have to go. Is this, like, for that particular one with the person being an hour away, I mean, I would think that, my God, there's no one closer, you know, to this person. So, I mean, is it just...
No, I'm the one who's close for picking them up.
Okay.
So okay. I'm the closest person for picking them up. But whether they go half a mile or whether they go,
right,
you know, an hour away, that's their prerogative.
Okay.
But Uber connects
right.
the driver with the closest passenger.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Okay, okay. Interesting, boy. Now, what? Let's go ahead and talk about a couple of your experiences with
mm-hmm.
riders. And
sure.
what would you say, we're going to go ahead and start with the most positive. What would be one or maybe two, you know, of the positive experiences, you know, or riders that really made an impression on you in a positive way?
Well, in particular, the one that, that you brought up about that young gal who worked at the assisted living place. Like,
uh-huh.
you know, if I just saw her on the street, I mean, I'm pretty extroverted, and I can have a conversation with pretty much anyone, you know, for a few minutes or so. But if I just saw her on the street, I probably would just pass her by and wouldn't, you know, look to engage or anything. And
mm-hmm.
yet, this particular young woman, she was like working two jobs, and you know, really like trying to strategize about, you know, where to get. And she didn't have a college degree or anything, but and she and her mom were, you know, working on making a living together and strategizing and just trying to do her best and all. And she just had such a good spirit, and she was so frank and honest and funny and all that. Like a lot of what I really enjoy about Uber is when what my eyes see and my like
mm-hmm.
initial assumptions about someone, and then like the experience that I have. And when there's a real, when I go from kind of like, ah, yeah, you know, here's this person, to like, oh, wow, here's this person. So for me, it isn't always necessarily a specific thing, as in, oh, they did this or said that. It's more like the transformation and the delta between what I thought the experience was going to be and then
uh-huh.
what it turns out to be. And I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I find that very interesting. So I've had a lot of situations where, you know, I've had some rides and all, of course, that are more fun and, you know, singing along to, you know, some songs and or a conversation that maybe was a little more intellectual or, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
more satisfying, but equally sometimes just, you know, taking someone, you know, I remember like even just taking like a gal who was on, you know, definitely on all kinds of public assistance and all and taking her to the laundromat. And she
right.
was just so charming and so lovely and so sweet and telling me about all the things that she was doing to make her life better and getting, you know, getting
oh.
a degree. And, you know, like, so like I get to experience like it's good to hear someone's story. For me, that's satisfying.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I mean, and I'm also fine sometimes when someone just wants to be quiet in the back of the car, because one of the most surprising things for me about driving for Uber is that sometimes not having any room to multitask
yeah.
is good.
Right.
So, you know, when I'm driving by myself, I'm like pushing buttons on the radio and I'm listening to personal development CDs and I'm doing this
uh-huh.
and that. And, you know, frankly, I'm checking my text every once in a while. I might look and be like, oh, I got it like a second here. Well, I've like got it, you know, I'm going to stoplight, I'm going to look and, you know, whatever. And when I'm driving, I'm like, oh, I'm like, that's not my focus right now. My focus is my passenger.
That's it.
To get them there safely.
Yeah.
So it's actually like a sort of a freedom to not fidget as much, which is probably a non-issue for
right.
a lot of people. But for me, actually
yeah.
I don't like a lot of sound. So
okay.
I don't play the radio unless they ask. I don't play music. I may change
right.
that going down the road. But so like just to be like quiet and with another person and not speaking and not reaching for a distraction. Like that's an actually pretty for me a pretty interesting experience.
Yeah, that's you know well I mean in really in today's society you know I was talking to one of my guests last week. We were talking about silence, you know, and just how, you know, in today's world, we really don't allow ourselves that time. And, you know, and there's so much insight and inspiration and just peacefulness can come from silence, you know, and we just sometimes don't do it. I mean, you know, so many people have to have background noise, whatever that noise is, you know, so I can understand it. Now, with the person who, you know, comes in and, you know, you're kind of talking with them and sharing their story, do you let them know that you are going to be writing about them, or do you ask them if it's okay to write about your interaction with them?
I don't let them know, and I don't tell them, and I don't ask.
Okay.
So
I know you don't name names. So I mean,
I don't name names,
you know.
And I don't say, like, you know, I took them, dropped them off in a 2400 block of this and that at their home. I don't, you know. I mean, there are times.
Right.
I remember once writing about a passenger. So I have books that aren't published yet. I mean, they're in the process of being edited and all. And so in one of the upcoming stories, like, there's this one guy who, if you know by chance, a guy who lives in Olney, Maryland, which is near where I am, and is in his sort of mid to late 30s, and was married to a Peruvian woman who was 10 years older than him, and and got hit by a car and broke his back in two cases, and now works as a pharma tech, you'll know who I'm talking about. You know, I mean, because there's probably not, you know. So there's sometimes when the singularity, when the specificity of what I talk about really kind of speaks to a specific person. So in general, I try to be careful about not being too much like that. And because it's not about outing anyone or whatever, but I also want to provide enough information so that people feel like there's a real person in my car. And I've had, for example, one of my beta readers who's really wonderful and gives me great feedback and all, like, he's reading my books and helping me proofread them and all, and he just, when, you know, he comments on in the text, you know, we share the document and all, he's like, I can't see this person, I don't know who this person is, I need more description. And I went in and I wrote and I edited and I said, blah blah blah, you know, white guy, early 30s, brown hair, I said wouldn't be able to spot him in a crowd if I saw him the next day, you know, like, I mean, like part of the thing was he was kind of nondescript, you know? So sometimes I like to, you know, I like to provide enough information that people like feel there's a real person in my car. I've also had other people, you know, one of my Amazon reviews was someone's like, I don't know why she points out why people are white or black, who cares? And it's like, well, it's one of the primary descriptors when you're talking about someone is their skin color. Skin color is relevant for a job or a title or a function or a purpose. But when you're talking about, you know, a young gal in her late 20s got in my car, you know, she's Asian, you know, whatever, or Korean, you know, she looks Korean or something, I mean, it's a descriptor. So I have some people who like that and some people who don't. But I try to provide some description of the person.
And information
about the conversation.
Yeah, well, you know, I can understand. I mean, I can understand both sides. You know, the fact of you know, some people saying that it's, you know, irrelevant in the sense that, you know, why should it matter? But on the other hand, I think part of your collection of stories, that it seems to me that the whole purpose is to show that no matter who you are, you know, what race you are, what age you are, what gender you are, we all have stories, you know, stories to share, and inspirational kinds of stories, and in a way, I think that that's helpful because, you know, and many times, you know, people will prejudge, you know, based on race or gender and age as to, you know, what a person's story is, you know, and I think that, you know, that prejudgment, that judgment, really, you know, prevents us from really connecting with people on a heart-to-heart level.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And another thing, I didn't even think about this until just now speaking with you, but I remember, you know, some good 15, 20, 25 years ago, that a lot of times people wouldn't, in my friendship circles now, when people would talk about someone and they were describing someone, they would only mention their race if they were not white. And I remember just consciously deciding, I don't know when it was, 15, 20, 25 years ago, whatever, that I was going to, when I talked about people, that I was going to, when I would describe someone, I'd be like, oh, yeah, this white girl who blah, 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 instead of just being like this girl or this gal or this lady, and start putting race on, because if the only time race is used is to describe other than white, then that's, to me, more of a problem. But if white is used just as commonly as black is used just as commonly as Japanese or Asian or, whatever, Latino, then it's a descriptor. And that was, that was just part of my motivation was to add into awareness when people talk that when you describe a white person, especially if you're white, to say a white person, if you're describing their physicality, again, not so relevant for job descriptions or job applications and stuff, but yeah.
Well, and again, that's in that particular sense, you're using it equally, again, just as a descriptor and not as assuming that anything other than white needs to be described, mm-hmm. Now, what and that woman, by the way, that positive story about the assisted living woman was really interesting. Now, what would you say were maybe one of your most challenging rides?
I remember this one ride that I had where the GPS was taking me in a loop. I mean, it was literally, I was like, I would drive to a certain point. It would say, turn, turn, turn. I would do this. I'd get to the point. I would be right back where I started. And I kept looping like two or three times in this small little kind of rundown neighborhood outside of Baltimore. And I started to get very frustrated. And then my passengers called and they could see that I was going in a loop and they tried to give me directions and they gave me the wrong directions. And I remember that the combination of, being in sort of a more poor neighborhood. And I wasn't just driving down small streets. I was driving down alleys. Like GPS was taking me down alleys with broken bricks and trash cans. And it was just not a pleasant place. And I don't have a good sense of direction on my own accord as a general rule. And so I'm very dependent upon GPS. And so I was dependent upon this technology and I was trying to find these people. And I remember when I accepted the ride that said that my passenger was only like 2 minutes or 3 minutes away. And so it's like, well, great. Now I'm like 7 or 8 minutes away. And then they gave me wrong directions. And what was challenging was my internal experience. So I was starting to go into fear and I was starting to go into judgment of my, my passenger because they gave me stupid directions. And what was really intense about the ride was that by the time they got in the car, I could have spiraled down into just a hateful, I don't want you in my car, just filled with judgment deflected at them. That was really, judgment toward myself and all. And so with every time I would loop around again and GPS would take me the wrong, I would just I would have to take these really deep breaths and center myself. So the challenge or the difficulty was not so much with the passenger, but more with me. I only gave a 3-star ride to one passenger ever. That's the lowest I've ever given anyone. I should have given them 1 star. But someone once called me when he was coming in on an Amtrak train and called me basically for me to wait 15 minutes while his train was arriving. So that was in my earlier days. And now I know I could cancel the ride if he's not there within 5 minutes and I could have gotten paid a cancellation fee that he would have had to pay. And so, I've had some situations where I think kind of the worst is when, when the passengers make you wait a while. Because they know when they look at the app, they can tell. When you go to ask and request an Uber ride, the app will tell you, a driver is 3 minutes away or 8 minutes away. And so you know. I mean, it's not a surprise.
Right.
It's no surprise when your Uber person
right.
shows up and goes like, oh, my God, now I have to get my purse and grab my jacket. And go. I mean, like, you
uh-huh.
should be ready. You should either be
right.
ready to leave the house when the, you know, or whatever your destination is when the ride shows up, or you should be standing outside waiting. You know, I mean, like, there's really no reason to be like, oh, okay, I'm coming down now. Like, you know, so to me,
right.
I mean, you asked about a specific thing, but I spoke to a more generic
yeah.
thing. But to me, what's so different about Uber and taxis is that everyone understands when you get into an Uber that you're getting into a human being's personal car. And so the
right.
relationship is already different. I'm not taking a taxi that has a medallion that's run by a company that has this, that, and that, and garages and numbers and dispatchers. And, you know, it's a different
right.
relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not looking to have a relationship with my cab driver. I mean, I'm not looking to be an unpleasant person.
right.
I don't want him or her to be unpleasant.
Right.
But I'm not looking to have a relationship with a taxi driver. But with Uber, there is a built-in status change where you're starting off from a different level. It's like, I'm a human being, you're a human being. I know that sounds terrible because I'm not trying to say that taxi drivers aren't human beings.
No,
it's,
I know what you're saying.
Intimacy,
it's more personal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's more personal. You're coming into my car, period.
Right.
And so for me, the way that the relationship starts, like, you know, if someone's late or if, you know, they come in and they're still talking on their phone and they don't even, like, stop and acknowledge and, like, say hi or whatever. Like you basically, it's like, that's your first impression, you know. And as well, like, I try to, you know, turn and look at the people and look them in the eye and say my name and, you know, so it's a two-way street. But I think that
yeah.
sometimes probably the relationships or when people are upset with their Uber drivers or whatever, part of it is probably like, well, how did you get in the car? Did you get in the car? Like you were shopping in Walmart and like you were just, you know, treating some service employee who's, you know, beneath you, like that you need a ride, or did you get in the car like you're getting into another human being's car? Like, thank you so
right.
much for the ride. And I think that
yeah.
impacts the culture, which for the better, but I think also when people are upset, that I think that that's one of the reasons is that the two parties didn't start the relationship.
Yeah, I agree.
Off
okay, we know,
yeah,
you know, that the your GPS story. I mean, for me, I easily admit that I am geographically challenged or directionally dysfunctional. You know, whichever phrase.
Mm-hmm.
I get turned around. I mean, whenever I go to a particular spot that I've never been before, I always give myself extra time, and a U-turn or two is not uncommon. So, but
absolutely.
But people who ride with me know that that's the case. You know, and it's like I accept it. You know, and you know, you accept it too. So, now one last question is, you know, I read the story. About your first tip, you know, it was from a couple ladies who work for Big Pharma, and that you weren't a fan of Big Pharma, and neither am I, of Big Pharma. So, you know, whenever you are, you know, engaging your riders in a discussion, if you should happen upon, you know, something like that where there's a, you know, that there's just something about what the person does or their, you know, their belief systems that run contrary to you, do you kind of back away from a discussion? Obviously, you don't want to create conflict, but, I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, yeah, so I'm an extrovert and I talk a lot, so I can pretty much wiggle in and out of any conversation how I want to.
Okay.
So
okay.
yeah, I'm not looking to have an argument with
no.
with my passengers. I mean, it's and part of that I think is just a kind of a midlife thing and a maturity thing where it's like, you know, the more years I have in me, the less I'm interested in telling people what to do because it's like people have to want your help in order to receive it, and the amount of life force that I've expended in the course of my existence trying to help people that I thought needed help that didn't want help is pretty extensive.
Yeah.
yeah. You know, it's a, you know, I mean, no right or wrong or, you know, no lack of love for myself. I mean, but there's a learning that I've had over the years that has often come quite painfully
mm-hmm.
of trying to affect and impact people that don't want affecting or impacting. So, but I did have the idea today, you know, with the whole, so this, you know, with the day after the election and all, just, you know, just wondering, like, well, you know, what if I just drove around and asked people how they thought about it, and not to get into a conversation, like not to support their yeses or argue their noes, or to be not to have an engagement of he said she said
philosophy
and,
point
and,
of view, yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, but just like more like to listen, and because I really do think there's a bit of a, you know, what they're calling it, like a civil war of perception that's going on. That, you know, people look at the same situation and see it so radically different. And so I'm just a little curious about that. Might do that.
That would be a curious thing to explore. Okay, well, gosh, we're well into like the second half of the show. We've got about 20 minutes left. I want to take just a quick break, about 90 seconds, and then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the gig economy, because that's something that, you know, some of the listeners may have heard about and may actually be engaged in and not know it. So I want to talk about that when we come back, okay?
Okay, sure.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Jesse Newbern, and we're talking about her book, Uber Chronicles, Field Notes from the Front Seat. Again, you can find out more about Jesse and her book by visiting her website, which is uber-chronicles.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description, and also her book is available from amazon.com, and there is a link to her book there in the show page description. And I'm trying to get Jesse back here, and my studio is kind of going bonkers here, and I think I have her now. Jesse, are you there? Okay, let's see here. Hold on, folks. My studio decided to freeze up on me, and tell me when you're there. Jesse, do I have you there? Okay, hold on. Sorry about this, folks. Okay, hang on, Jesse. I'm trying to get you back. It'll just be a minute here. I don't know why we have a little problem here with the studio folks. Let me just try and refresh my studio. So everybody, again, please hang on. Boy. Sorry, folks, this is a problem when we have this live streaming that occasionally we do have technical issues here. So let's see here. Let me just refresh my browser here, and hopefully we'll be able to get Jesse back without any problems. Let's see here. Okay, Jesse, I got you back. Are you there?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. You know, technology, you know, when it just, I mean, when it works, it's great. When it doesn't, it can be a real challenge. So anyway, thanks for saving me. Okay, so you know, let's talk a little bit about the gig economy. So for listeners who may not have heard what that is, can you explain that?
Sure. I imagine others may explain it differently, but for me, the gig economy is very much the worldview and the perception that says, I don't want to put all my money in one basket, and I want to have multiple things that are going on. And a lot of times, to me, gig also refers to things that can be turned up and down in terms of the volume of work and engagement and income. So a part-time job, two part-time jobs, or a full-time job and a part-time job, is not so much the gig economy to me, but like, for example, what I do is, I mean, I drive for Uber, which is fast cash. You know, I drive, I can get paid out that day or within the week. I'm doing the Uber Chronicles books, which are, that's building an income stream so that whether somebody buys the book today or someone buys the book in November of 2027, I still get paid. So it's a gig of writing to create passive income. I have a gig where I run some local websites and calendars, and I do some services and event promotion and stuff for people. Again, it's a gig, like, you know, people engage me for a moment of time to do something. And then I also, I'm in direct sales. I'm in with an anti-aging company. There are some fabulous products there, so that's another gig and also another income stream that I'm developing. And then I also work with an SEO firm that does search engine optimization and websites and app development and such. We're very technical and are leaning, and I get commission from them. So to me, all of these, I'm not doing things that are like salaried. I mean, you can mix and match your gig, you know. I think that rather than it focusing on what I'm doing so much because I can get caught up in all that, but I think that in particular, the Gen Xer part of the mostly American population, the Gen Xers are born 1961 to 1981. They are in generational theory a generation that's known as the nomad generation. And so the Gen X mindset is to always carry your skills with you. Like, you always carry your skills and your tool chest, your toolkit, which is always on you. So if you have to get up and leave for whatever reason, the economy changed, situation, opportunity over here, whatever your reason, when you leave, you carry your assets with you. It's a real different mindset. I mean, when we're talking generations, you're talking tens of millions of people, there's no way that any theory or conversation around generations applies to every single person exactly the same inside of the generation. But what generational theory talks about is it talks about the life conditions in which a specific generation was born, goes through young adulthood, into midlife, and into elderhood, and how the different generations impact each other. So they're formed by each other and they form each other. And so what is true for the nomad generation, which is today's Gen Xers, is that there's a distinct belief that the system is very broken and that nothing, no institutions or organizations or governments can be relied on.
Right.
And so whereas boomers grew up in a very, 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 very different childhood and young adulthood at a different phase of life, and boomers are very oriented toward turf. Boomers are very oriented toward this is mine, this is my corner office, this is my job, this is my title, you know, this is mine, 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 mine. And so when you're the generation that comes behind a generation that's mine-oriented and very king of the hill, which boomers don't see themselves as, and there's nothing right or wrong. It's not like, oh, that's wrong.
Right.
It's just, it's an is. It's an is.
It's just the way it is. Right.
And it's just the way it is. And, you know, you can have a lot of boomers like, oh, I don't care about positions. I don't care about this and that. It's like, but you know what? I can tell you, as a Gen Xer coming behind your generation, this is what it felt like to be behind you. And so what Gen Xers become extremely good at, just naturally, is they become because no two generations that are ever right next to each other want to compete on the same level. It's a natural built-in thing that generations don't compete in the same realm, the same way. So the way Gen Xers deal with getting what's theirs, and again, we're talking about, you know, 81 million Gen Xers. I mean, a huge, huge generation. And, you know, bigger than boomers, bigger than millennials, because we were impacted by immigration. So our numbers, the birth rates are lower for Gen Xers, but the volume of Gen Xers is higher, which is a statistic that very few people talk about. But we are this massive generation that's coming behind this very mine-oriented generation. And so we had to find ways in the crevices and in the spaces in between the already occupied spaces to find our ways. So you combine the nomad attitude of carrying your skills with you, of not trusting to put down the stakes and all. It doesn't mean that a Gen Xer can't live somewhere for 50 years and be a stalwart member of the community and the mayor.
It's not like
we're all living in tents, but there's just an attitude. Like you find it all over when you start talking to Gen Xers. You might find someone who's making $150,000 a year with a senior level position, but they DJ on the side. Why? Because in case anything happens, they can always turn that one up. It's always there. You find people who've got steady careers, but they do, you know, they teach a yoga class or do some personal training on the side. You know, why? Mm-hmm. You can make more money if you did. Other thing. And part of it is the mindset. So the gig economy, especially as the Gen Xers are now getting older, and you know the millennial generation is rising up, and boomers favor millennials in terms of hiring, as a general rule. They want to pass the baton on to fawning younger people as opposed to more pragmatic, practical leaders who will do things differently than they did them. And so there's a whole lot of just, you know, basic age discrimination and job discrimination, whatever. Which, you know, I'm not complaining about. I'm just, you know, whatever it is kind of what's there. And so, but you combine all these different things of the boomer mentality toward mine, the Gen X or nomad thing, and then an economy where jobs, J-O-B-S's with full-time benefits and all, are harder and harder to find. But there's more and more people, more and more companies that are parsing out bits of work. You know, whether you do Uber for a little bit, or you do a little of this, or, you know, it's like, yeah, I work full time, but I'm, you know, doing some, I manage to do the books for a couple friends in their local businesses. I mean, it doesn't matter what form it shows in, but what it is it's a mindset. Millennials, although many of them are in the gig economy, they don't want the gig economy. They want to be, again, we can't talk to a person, we just talk about the generation. But millennials, as a generalization, want to have long-term relationships with employers that are healthy relationships where the employers are invested in their career paths and are loyal to them, and they will bring their loyalty to them. So it's a complete falsehood when people say millennials aren't loyal, because it's actually they're craving that loyalty. Because again, the millennials come behind the Gen Xers, who they see scrapping for little bits of this and that to cobble together a life. And they're just like, whoa, I don't want that. And then the generation that will come behind the millennials are the kids that are being born now, children that are always born during the equivalent of society's winter, you know, the Great Devaluation, the Great Depression, whatever words are given to that era. And that generation is always smaller. And they come behind the millennials, and they'll have their way that they'll contribute to the world, and their professional method of success will be through what's called the credentialed expert. They're the ones that have the three PhDs, and they're you know, think tanks, and you know, they've written, you know, 18 books on a subject or whatever. And each generation relates to the marketplace very differently and at different phases of its life. So the gig economy, and why I'm such a fan of it, is because even to my Gen Xer friends that have full-time jobs or whatever, it's like, but you don't know. Like, you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what's going to happen with your industry. You don't know what's going to happen, you know, with a job that you may hit a point where you're making a nice big salary and you just bought a new house, and then they look at you and go, wow, we could hire three people for that salary. Let's, you know. So the gig economy is a way of spreading, you know, not putting all your eggs in one basket. Obviously, you know, it's much safer if someone, or very nice if someone has a full-time job or some really stable income and only gigs a little on the side. I don't know if I want to do this for forever or whatever, but I'm right now, right, you know, I'm right. Doing like five or six different things. I mean, sometimes it's great,
yeah,
and sometimes it's not as great. But what I like about it is that I can do different things, explore different things. I'm in really different industries. I'm not trying to do six different things in the same industry, you know, to the same market. So in my understanding of generational theory, we are in a winter. When you are in a winter, there's almost always a total war. And the total war tends to come toward the end of the winter, which is that all the generational seasons are 20, there's 17 to 22 year cycles of seasons.
Right.
So there's a spring, there's a summer, there's a fall, and there's a winter. And we're smack dab in the middle of winter. And there's, you know, so far in every winter, there's always been a total war. So my, you know, thing is, I look at this, and granted, I could, you know, easily have a job somewhere else or whatever, or maybe not so easily, I don't know. But there is a likelihood that things are going to get really rocky.
Yeah.
And so being more diversified is a protection of sorts.
Yeah, great. Well, guys, we're out of time. Jesse, this has really been a great discussion. I really want to thank you. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Jesse Newbern, and we've been talking about her book, Uber Chronicles, Field Notes from the Front Seat. And again, you can find out more by visiting the website, www.uber-chronicles.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. And again, her book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a link to her book there as well in the description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And until we meet again.